South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Once again, before I get started today, I have a little announcement to make. Recall that for the last couple months or so, I've been talking about preparing a Latin American healthcare report. Since it seems like no one else with boots on the ground down here in Latin America like me has ever even attempted to put together such a thing. Well, anyway, it's done and available on expatwisdom.com. At least it will be there in the next couple of days anyway. And for all of you guys and gals who are already on the mailing list because you signed up at expatwisdom.com for free reports and things like that in the past, you already got a link in your mailbox and you just might have downloaded it already. Now, just a few things about this report. Besides the fact that you, or no one else for that matter, has ever seen anything like it before, I can guarantee that. Anyway, it clocks in at about 85 pages. And of course, since I wrote it, I shoved in a few jokes and photos that should make you laugh a bit. And of course, a few of my stories as well. Because, you know, if I didn't do that, a healthcare report can be pretty dry reading, and I want you to be able to get through the whole thing. There's so much good, up-to-date information in there, I don't know why I'm giving it out for free, but, well, when I first announced I was going to plug away at this thing, that's what I promised, so it's free, just like I said, and it'll give you a hell of a lot to think about. So, like I said, it's about 85 pages, with an additional 15 or 20-page report linked in the center of it. It's the only link, and that part with the statistics I didn't write, of course. And that links to a document that's an international compilation of medical costs for various common treatments, procedures, and operations for the year 2012. And that's for you to use as a comparison when you're reading the rest of my report. So the whole thing's over 100 pages, but don't let that scare you. Reports like that are supposed to have big, bold letters and a lot of charts and photos, so you don't fall asleep and drool on your keyboard while attempting to read it. So if you didn't get a link to it in your mailbox, go to expatwisdom.com and pick up a free copy while it's still free. Okay, enough said about that. Let's push on with the rest of the show. You know, I still get the occasional email from people asking me if they need shots when they come down here to Latin America. You know, vaccinations against bugs and parasites and amoebas and bacteria that don't exist or were completely eradicated up in Cleveland a long time ago. Tell you the truth, I don't know if I could survive in Cleveland either. Anyway, the two most common email questions I get about vaccinations and prophylactic treatment and stuff are concerning the two most common bug-borne diseases down here in Latin America, dengue fever and malaria. Now, I know that dengue fever thing comes up because you see occasional warnings about it on the internet. And the World Health Organization likes to throw fuel on the dengue fire by saying that 1.5 million people in Latin America get affected by dengue fever every year. Which sounds, you know, horrific. But when you consider the fact that there are over 500 million people in Latin America, that's only one in about 300 people. Which, statistically, still sounds pretty awful now, doesn't it? But here's the thing. In 2013, so far, in all of Latin America, only 297 people have died. Which still sounds kind of ominous, but when you consider that 150 people a year are killed by falling coconuts. So if you really want to protect yourself, you really should go out and buy a helmet, too. Don't you think? And even though that puts a little bit of perspective on it, I think we should talk about dengue for a second, since it is on the minds of quite a few people, judging by the email I get. Well, this I can tell you firsthand. In my 20-something years down here, the only people I've ever met that have had dengue are the very poor and lower-middle-class Latins who basically live in tin-roof shacks, most of them living very close to polluted water and occasionally right on the edge of it, like 10 or 20 feet from a polluted ditch or a river. Now, you see, dengue, like malaria, is caused by a mosquito, and you do get very sick. And the chances of getting it from one or two mosquito bites is about 1 in 1 million, like winning the lottery. And it has been estimated that the people that do get dengue and malaria are basically the people that live around stagnant water and get hundreds of mosquito bites a year. And that certainly adds up, because by the time a kid's, let's say, 10 years old, if he gets a couple of hundred bites a year, well, you do the math. And the funny thing, one doctor in the outback told me that it's always the very young children in the age that get afflicted most because their reflexes aren't fast enough to swat mosquitoes when they land. Whereas people from 10 to maybe 60 years old, Hear mosquitoes buzzing, see and feel them when they land, and swat and kill a good percentage of them before they ever dig in. So it's really a numbers game, but you shouldn't lose any sleep over it, and I'll tell you why. But like I said, I've never once met an expat, gringo, or foreigner who ever was afflicted by it, either dengue or malaria. Though over the years, I've met a whole lot of low-rent backpackers that, by rights, should have picked up something. Malaria, dengue, lice, crabs, whatever. Judging by the fact that when you run into these guys and gals, they seem to love to wear cut-off shorts. Which, by the way, I never recommend unless you're out at the beach and playing around in the sand. But backpackers and hikers never seem to learn. And you often notice their sweaty, pink, sunburned legs are just filled with bug bites. So if there were any first world people that should be susceptible to something like that, it would be those lovable, stinky backpackers packed in six to a room sharing the same bathroom. And those places, of course, have no air conditioning, so they leave the windows open. And in those flea bag joints, screens are either non-existent or the ones they have are loaded with gaps and holes. And I gotta tell you, when I run into gringos and fresh green expats, every so often you'll notice that one of them freaks out when bit by a mosquito, thinking, oh no, now I'm going to come down with something really nasty. Oh God, why did I come down here in the first place? I mean, really, there's an uptight, high-strung, anal gringo in every crowd. Actually, more like two or three. Yet most of them seem to bear as much skin as possible. And by day, always slogging through a jungle or a swamp, chronically short of bug spray because, well, on their budget, a can of DEET cost about as much as one or two nights in a scumbag motel. But just to ease your mind about dengue, here's the real facts. Brazil, the Latin American country that had the most cases by far, in 2012 had about 800,000 cases and only 100 deaths. And again, every one of the mortalities came from the very poorest slums and ghettos. And then came Paraguay, Dominican Republic, and Mexico. They came in at around 30 to 35 deaths a year. And again, not a single first world tourist counted among that group. Now, you might think that some of those very off the tourist trail Latin countries that I recommend so much might be loaded with dengue and very high mortality rate, simply because 20 to 30% of the population are considered extremely poor, thus living in tin shacks in mosquito-infested areas with open doors and windows and obviously no screens. Anyway, listen to this. Last year in 2012, in El Salvador, only one person died of dengue. Guatemala, two people died. Bolivia and Venezuela, seven people died from dengue. And Honduras, 15 people died. In Nicaragua, five people died. And what about those high-volume gringo tourist destinations? Nice places for vacations, but places I don't recommend you become a permanent expat. Well, here's the breakdown on dengue in those countries. Costa Rica, three people died. Uruguay had zero deaths from dengue. And in 2011, no one died from dengue in Panama either. And again, with these mortality figures, not a single first-world gringo tourist or expat was among the mortalities. And according to statistics of the people who got sick and recovered, there actually aren't any statistics on gringos and expats because they're listed as negligible. And as far as dengue, the way the statistics work out, only about 1 in 5,000 people afflicted eventually die, which may or may not seem a bit high to you if you contract the disease, which you won't. But I want you to compare that statistic, one death for 5,000 afflicted, to the infant mortality rate in the U.S., for every 5,000 infants born, 30 of them die. So in other words, it's actually 30 times more dangerous to be born in the U.S. than to contract dengue in some third world backwater. Now that's something to think about, huh? Now in my 20-something years down here, I've only met one person who's actually had dengue. The only one who's ever brought it up anyway. She was a local girl, naturally. And she was sick for a couple of weeks and eventually recovered to 100%. And in fact, her story's worth telling. She was a model doing promotional photo shoots for a beer company in Belize on the beach in a really dumpy part of Belize called Punta Gorda. So they were romping around the beach doing this photo shoot day and night for 3 days with campfires going at night and such because the beer TV commercial they were shooting was supposed to show young, upscale, 20-something beautiful people having fun on the beach day and night. And of course, the sponsor's beer was the secret to all that fun and happiness, right? Now, there were about a half a dozen young, good-looking male models, too, there, in t-shirts, windbreakers, and bathing trunks, mostly covered up compared to the ladies. But the girls spent about 12 hours running around in skimpy bikinis. That was it. No t-shirts, no cover-ups, no windbreakers for them. I mean, this is Latin America, you know? Anyway, she said they were on a deserted beach about 15 miles from the nearest town, and the production company brought everything but bug spray. So she remembers getting about 50 bug bites a night. And a couple days later, she came down with classic dengue symptoms, which lasted about a week or so. She said a few days after the shoot, she got a terrible headache, hot and cold flashes, fever, along with a lot of sweating and bone pain. And of course, since those classic symptoms show up right away, the doctors down here know exactly what to do. If it's bad enough, they'll hydrate you with an IV drip, put you in bed for a couple of days, manage the fever, and that's about it. Because you see, there is no one-shot cure for dengue. There's no prophylactic pills or vaccines to take, and when you've got it, there's no specific medicine for it. It's all about electrolyte balance and maintaining your fluid levels. However, if you don't get medical attention and you leave it go, it could turn into the hemorrhagic type of dengue where you get red splotches all over your skin. Then, if you don't get medical treatment, you could die within 4 to 8 hours. And that's what happens to the unlucky 1 in 5,000. And really, I don't know why I'm telling you this, because down here in Latin America, you actually have a better chance of dying choking on a bean burrito. Because once, believe it or not, I was in a restaurant in Costa Rica where a very large guy did choke on a bean burrito. A gringo, of course. And some skinny young gringo lady of about 90 pounds ran over and tried to give him the Heimlich, but she was no match for him. She couldn't even get her arms all the way around the guy. And eventually an ambulance came and hauled him off. And you know, the rest of us in the restaurant figured he died. But you know, he must have survived because I didn't read about it in the next couple days' papers. But I'll tell you what, after they hauled that guy away, everyone else in the restaurant took a cue from the incident and actually started chewing their food. They say it tastes better when you chew your food. That's what I've heard anyway. And why do I say that? Because after being down here so long, I realize that every gringo I know seems to eat his food about 4 times as fast as the average Latin guy or gal. And I'm talking about gringo first world men here, as opposed to first world gringo women who always seem to eat a lot slower than the men. And regarding that, here's a little warning to all you expat wannabe males up there. If you eat too fast down here in Latin America, you could pay the price. And I don't mean you're going to choke or get sick and die or anything. What I mean to say is, sooner or later, you're going to get invited by your Latin girlfriend or Latin boyfriend or husband or wife or even Latin co-worker or friend to a sit-down dinner or two at one of their houses. And since us gringo guys always eat way too fast, we'll pretty much finish way ahead of the rest of the Latin folks at the table. And nope, you won't get scolded for eating too fast. You'll get no gaff like you might have gotten from your mom up north. Instead, for the Latin lady of the house, it's a signal that you really loved her food and that you're raring to go for seconds. You'll make a great first impression. However, if you're like me and so many other expats, when eating a sit-down dinner at the average Latin family home, I guarantee they'll be serving you things you've never seen before and things you're only putting into your mouth because you want to be polite company. And believe me, I've forced myself to eat a lot of things I've regretted later, if you know what I mean. And even though I've been here a long, long time, there are still 2 or 3 dishes that are often served at the average Latin home that I even try to avoid looking at, much less eating. In that case, I'm always looking for a diversion to slip it to the dog. By now, I'm pretty sneaky about it. For example, I can't stand looking at any dish that's got chicken feet or pig's ears in it. For that matter, anything that's got tongue, brains, hoof, stomach, or eyes in it. To me, that stuff's pretty disgusting too. But eyes, thank God so far they've only shown up in soup. They really freak me out. I don't like my food looking back up at me, you know? But the worst thing, the thing that really drives me nuts at a Latin dinner table, is when the Latin gal or guy next to me or in front of me starts eating the cartilage off the turkey or the chicken carcass, crunching away on it like it was a candy cane or peanut brittle. That just gives me the willies like fingers on a chalkboard. Yuck. So anyway, here's my advice to you gringos and expats out there. When you're at a Latin's house, try to keep pace with the rest of them. Don't eat too fast, or you'll get a great big second helping of everything that you can't refuse. And if the dog's full by then, you'll have to grin and bear it. Not only that, they'll load you with a plate to take home, which literally will be a doggy bag. Now, I'm not insinuating that Latins are bad cooks at all. That's not the case. They have a lot of very tasty dishes. It's just hard for us expats and gringos to take some of the traditional foods, stuff that we're not used to at all, that makes you pause for a moment when there's a slab of it staring at you on the plate. Anyway, who am I to say? There's no accounting for taste. Who knows? You might like a nice toasted chicken foot once in a while. But the thing is, you've got to try one first. And that's something I just can't seem to bring myself to do. But I'll tell you a little secret. Dogs love them. Oh, and by the way, all you listeners out there who totally agree with my sentiments on being grossed out when people eat tongue, brains, stomach, hoofs, cartilage, and eyes, I've got just one question for you. Have you had a hot dog lately? All right, enough said about that. Probably too much, as a matter of fact. Okay, now it's a must that we talk about something that you really have to keep your eyes open for. So expats and expat wannabes, sooner or later, whether you're on or off the tourist trail, you're going to be confronted with this, so listen up. As you make friends and hook up with Latin families, it's a 100% certainty that some of your new Latin friends and family are going to try to borrow money from you. And I know I mentioned a little bit about this on my last show, and right after that I got some emails from you guys and gals talking about your own problems up in Boston and Cleveland with people, friends, and family trying to borrow money from you. So I'd like to go into just a little bit more detail on the subject. Right now I'd like to give you some tips that I think you'll really appreciate if you ever come down here. Now the fact is, I've lost count of how many times Latins have tried to hit me up for a loan, and I've learned a great deal about Latin and gringo human nature in the process. In fact, just this week the body man who fixes my car asked me for a $150 loan so he could buy a new compressor. And you know, since I've been down here, I've probably lent money to maybe 5 Latin guys that I know. Though I estimate I've been hit up over 50 times since I've been down here. Still, like I said, I've only lent money to about 5. And of course, they weren't big amounts. I'd never do that because I know chances are I'm not going to get paid back. And even if they do make an effort at payments, in the beginning, you'll get a little back, but after that, they'll come in late or never. And since they are such small amounts, ranging from maybe 20 bucks to maximum, in my case anyway, about 600 bucks, I figure if I don't get paid back, it's not going to kill me. By the way, much as it goes against my grain to lend out even 600 bucks that I know I'm not going to get back, the only reason I did it was because it was my girlfriend's father that asked me for the loan, which puts a guy in a hell of a spot because if you don't lend the guy the money, for a while there'll be a cloud hanging over you every time you walk through the front door and every time you get invited for Sunday dinner. What I'm saying is it's not simple when that happens. It's an awful tough spot to be in. And of course, up in the States, the same thing might be happening to you. However, up there, you generally hang with people of the same socioeconomic class, and everybody's kind of in the same boat. So chances are friends and family might never hit you up for a loan, or do so very infrequently. Whereas, when you're down here in Latin America, you're the gringo, so you're Mr. Moneybags. And you know what? Compared to them, you really are. Of course, that doesn't mean you have any loose cash to spread around or give away, but they figure you're the closest thing they're going to get to a bank. And of course, they'd never be asking you for a loan if they had any credit or any collateral to go to the bank. And normally, like I said, they try to hit you up for very small amounts, like from 5 to 25 bucks, which to me reinforces the fact that about 80% of Latins live from day to day, or paycheck to paycheck. And you know, that's not to say they can't get some money from the local neighborhood loan shark. Every single Latin neighborhood has one or two of those guys around. I take it back. In the very high-end neighborhoods, you won't have any of that, because in high-end neighborhoods, people already have money. And by the way, in Latin America, loan sharking is completely legal. And even if it wasn't, they wouldn't be able to enforce it anyway. In fact, you'll even see loan sharks advertising in the yellow pages. And the rates, well, they're all over the map, depending what kind of risk they think you are. Some people get lucky and pay only 10% a month, while others will pay 30 to 50% a month. Depends on who you are, who you know, what kind of risk you are, and how much money you want. And sure, Latin governments are pissed off about these local loan shark businesses, and not because they're gouging the public, which they are. It's simply because governments have no way of monitoring them and squeezing them for taxes. And here's something I'm sure you didn't know. Remember last week I was talking about those big central markets that gringos love going to, where we could get everything and anything so rock bottom cheap, it's amazing. Anyway, what you didn't know is that there's a huge loan sharking business going down in every one of those markets. In fact, I just heard this from a friend a couple of weeks ago. He said that if you're a long-time, well-known vendor down at one of those markets, if everything fell in place, you could actually get a $100,000 loan within about a half an hour, cash. In fact, in the really big markets, that kind of stuff's done all the time. That's one place where loan sharking is big business. Generally, when some Latino I know tries to hit me up for cash, I use a fallback position that I've developed over the years that works out very well for me. What it is a diplomatic way of turning a guy down for a loan where neither of you walk away pissed off and neither party loses face either, which is an important consideration with Latin men and that macho streak that they all have. And by the way, I'm sure you could use this method up in the States. It would go down just as well. I wish I would have used it way back when. It would have saved me a lot of grief back in Chicago. But you live and learn. Anyway, I see over the years I've lent money to friends and family. Up in the States, I'm talking about now. And you know, it never really works out. You always either make enemies of them, or they miss the payout date or the payment plan, and they try to avoid you. And in the end, you're the bad guy, and the relationship's never the same. So since I left the States, I've had this hard and fast rule that if I do lend somebody money, I actually tell them it's a gift and I don't expect it back. And if they do pay me back, that would be nice, but it's not necessary. And of course, along with that, I'll never lend anybody real substantial amounts of money. Because if I told the person I didn't expect the money back, I'd really be an idiot, right? So once in a while, I'll lend somebody 5, 10, or maybe 20 bucks. Latin guys, that is, down here. Oh, and another thing, in my experience with Latins trying to borrow money from me, I find it's men 9 out of 10 times that'll ask you for the money. Though sometimes they'll have their wife or girlfriend approach you for the loan first. And out of the maybe 50 Latins over the years that have tried to borrow money from me, only 2 have been women. And if I am an occasional soft touch for small amounts, I almost never get it back, but it's not going to kill me, you know? But get this, the 2 ladies I lent money to, they paid me back. Late, which is normal, but they did pay up. So like I said, my latest episode involving that was my car body man. And he asked me about a week ago, when I dropped off a car for some body work, if I could lend him 150 bucks so he could buy a compressor. And since he wasn't asking for 5, 10, or 20 bucks like they normally do, I gave him my knee-jerk response, which nearly always works and allows everyone to save face, including me. I said, look, Emilio. That's his name, Emilio. I'd be glad to give you the 150 bucks. In fact, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the names and phone numbers of 5 Latin guys that I lent money to who never paid me back or started paying me back and stopped. Each one of them owes me over 150 bucks. So here's their names and phone numbers. And if you can collect 150 bucks from any one of these guys, you can have it. And you won't even have to pay me back. How's that? Basically, free money if you can get it. If you can collect it, you can have it. And you know what? It works every time. Well, almost every time, because they get the point. They realize that you've been through this already a number of times, and you're not a soft touch anymore. And you know what? I end up using that line once or twice a year when someone tries to borrow money from me. You know, anything over 20 bucks or so. You guys up in the first world, go ahead and use that line. It's a freebie, and it works almost every time. But I got to tell you, just today when I went to go pick up that car, he had the balls to ask me again to lend him 150 bucks, even though I went through that deadbeat spiel a week ago with him. And I thought he understood my point perfectly well. So today when he asked me, instead of going through that spiel again, I said, Emilio, how did you paint my car without a compressor? Because obviously he just did some body work and painted my car. And he hemmed and hawed and fumbled around with his words a bit and said, well, the old one still kind of works a bit, but it's on its last leg and I got to get me a new one. He kept saying, casi morto, which means almost dead. It's almost dead. Oh, and by the way, some years ago, before I figured out that standard answer I give about the 5 deadbeats when someone else tries to borrow money from me, I tried a different technique that didn't work at all. There was one guy in Costa Rica I played in a band with. A very, very excellent guitar player who didn't work a day job, so he was always broke. Well, one day he asked me to lend him 300 bucks because his guitar got stolen. And naturally, without a guitar, he couldn't play in the band, right? And the rest of us guys in the group depended on him. He was the lead player. So I lent him the money on the condition that the guitar was collateral. And he was supposed to pay me back in 6 months. Well, that 6 months went by and he didn't pay me. And I figured that's normal, and he promised to pay me in 2 more months. I mean, after all, he was making money playing gigs, so he had somewhat of an income. Then, 2 months later, his guitar was stolen. Again! My collateral, right? And, sure enough, he's not going to pay for a dead horse. And even me, who was out the 300 bucks, felt a little sorry for the guy. Now, you might wonder why this guy's guitar keeps getting stolen. Well, that's because he didn't actually have his own apartment or house to live in. He was a Peruvian guy living in Costa Rica with, get this, his gringa girlfriend, a lady who was about 20 years his senior. She was about 45 and he maybe 25. Now, she was doing all right. She had a rental car business with about 10 cars that she'd rent to tourists. After all, this was Costa Rica. And he was a guitar-playing Peruvian, a young, handsome guy with not a pot to pee in. Now, to me, this is a very good example of what happens to some gringo ladies that come down to Latin America to live. Like I said before, every Latin guy wants to hook up with a gringa. And at first, she thought she hit the jackpot. This guy is handsome, good-looking, and he's 20 years younger. And by the way, she had a couple of young teenage daughters living in the house, too. And unbeknownst to her, that little Peruvian guitar player was in love with one of them. He even admitted it to me and the rest of the band members. His real plan was working his way from mother to daughter. An all-around bad situation for the gringa lady, right? Now, on the tourist trail, like in Costa Rica, that happens a lot with divorced, middle-aged, or even younger gringa ladies that come down looking to start a new life, and they come down with some baggage, maybe some kids like that, and they get involved with a young, handsome Latin guy like that. A surfer dude, a guitar player, a young Antonio Banderas, selling hot dogs or renting beach chairs. You know the type. Long hair, 5 o'clock shadow, muscles, Jesus sandals, wife beater t-shirt. So I figure this guy got his guitar stolen 2 times because he's just kind of shiftless and crashing at this gringo lady's house all the time. You know, young, shiftless, no responsibilities. Now, you might wonder why this gringo lady didn't buy him a new guitar. Well, that's because after about 6 or 8 months, she was feeling the strain of having this guy around leeching off her. And personally, I think she was figuring out he had the hots for her daughter. So anyway, it looked like she was slowly but surely easing him out of her life. Now get this. The following Saturday, we had a beach party gig, and he shows up with a guitar. We figured he borrowed it, right? But when I got a bit closer to it, I realized it was the first guitar he said was stolen when he first asked me for the $300. So he scammed me as well. Had me convinced that guitar was stolen, and if he didn't have $300, well, we wouldn't have a lead player. So I walked up to him looking for an explanation, and I knew I wasn't going to get a good one. And I said, aha, guitar number one reappears. And then he said, half convincingly even, you know, Costa Rica's a small place and I knew it was going to show up somewhere. Then he said the weekend before he was at a block party and there were a couple of bands playing made up of young teenage kids and he spotted one playing his guitar. He walked up to the guy, told him it was his guitar and he was going to kick the crap out of him if he didn't give it back. And the young kid gave it back to him reluctantly and now the original owners has got it back. That was my young Peruvian friend's story, anyway. I could almost buy it, but knowing this guy, bottom line, I was out $300, though it did add more weight to my list of reasons to get the hell out of Costa Rica.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.